This is Focus 580, our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us this morning. In this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about student testing, achievement tests, and what these kinds of tests can tell us. And in part, we'll be talking about the National Assessment of Educational Progress, and sometimes known as NAEP, a test that's been given now across the country in a number of states for, I guess, about 10 years. Recently, some new recent results have come out, just within the last few days, in fact, on recent results on this test. And we'll be talking a little bit about this test and what it can tell us about student performance, and also talk about what's happening here in the state of Illinois with educational assessment, because indeed we have a test that we give, the Illinois Standards Achievement Test, which is given at several points along a student's educational career, with the same sort of idea in mind, that is to have some indication of how students in Illinois are doing, whether they're performing to the levels that we would like, and draw some comparisons between various kinds of students, different places in the state. We have three guests on the program with us this morning. Joining us by telephone, Brian Stetcher. He is a senior social scientist at RAND, who specializes in research on the development, implementation, quality, and effects of educational assessments and curriculum reforms. And he is with us because RAND put out a report last year looking at what the state NAEP test scores have to say about student achievement. It was published in book form, and it probably is still available from RAND. And then we have two folks here who are involved in education here in the state of Illinois. Carmen Pfeiffer, who is Deputy Superintendent for Standards, Assessment, and Accountability with the Illinois State Board of Education. And here in studio with me, Kevin Seymour, who's in charge of staff development with the Regional Office of Education for Champaign and Ford Counties. His office is over in Rantoul. And as we talk, questions, of course, are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. 333-WILL and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Mr. Stetcher, hello.
Good morning.
And Ms. Pfeiffer.
Good morning.
And Mr. Seymour here with me.
Good morning.
Glad to have you all here.
Thanks.
I think the first thing I'd like to do is maybe talk a little bit about the NAEP test. And before even going to talk about the current results, maybe I could ask Brian Stetcher to talk a little bit about how it is about this test and what it is and how it came to be. This is a test that actually was first instituted. We first started doing it in the first Bush administration. This was in 1990.
Well, that may be the case in Illinois, but in fact, I'll call it the NAEP.
Okay.
We'll just make a word.
Make it easier.
So it's easier to say.
Yeah.
It goes back 20 years.
Oh, uh-huh.
Or perhaps more. I've lost count exactly. It was instituted as a way to take the temperature of the nation, the performance of the nation's students in areas of content that were deemed broadly important. And it was purposefully designed not to be a test of individual students and not to report scores out state by state or district by district, but to be a broad spectrum view of how well kids in the nation were doing at critical grade levels, an elementary level, a middle school level, and a high school level. It's administered every other year, and the subjects rotate so that reading and mathematics are done very frequently, but other subjects are done periodically, social studies, history, science, art, have been included over during its history. And it allows you to track over time the general performance of students in the United States. In the last decade or so, there's been a movement to use it as a way to compare states. Mm. And that's a relatively new innovation in NAEP's history, but it's now the application that gets the most attention. And so states now get individual scores, and so they can be looked at in a kind of a horse race.
Uh-huh.
And It's now being, there are now attempts afoot to try to use it to interpret policy decisions and to as an evaluation tool to judge the quality of state educational efforts.
Well, that's one point in particular I'm sure that people are interested in, and I was interested in this idea that we've been talking now for years and years and years about school reform and have been doing different kinds of things. And so the natural question is, well, can we say certain reforms are actually make some sense and are yield results? I think there's some attempt at least to look at the NAEP scores and then make some generalizations about what works and what doesn't. Is that some? Can one indeed do that? Does it make sense to use them this way, or can they be used this way?
Well, it is. It makes some sense, although it has serious limitations. One of the things is that right now, the way NAEP is used, you get an average score for a state, and that's the basic unit of analysis. And to the extent that you believe reforms are interpretable at the level of a state rather than, say, a district or a local, some other local school site, then these scores are a very helpful benchmark that you can use for seeing how a state is changing. And in some cases, that makes a lot more sense than in others. Some states have a great deal of kind of centralized decision-making, and reforms that are implemented from the center spread rapidly and are implemented relatively uniformly across the state, and it makes sense to kind of say, did this initiative matter? Some states are very decentralized, and the decisions are down at the level of the local school board, and there it may make a lot less sense to talk about using NAEP to judge the quality of a reform because the reform differed from place to place within the state.
I want to here bring Carmen Pfeiffer into the conversation, since your special responsibility has to do with assessment. And I have to admit that I'm a little bit confused here about Illinois' involvement in this, that Illinois has given this test, but that our results aren't yet included in the whole?
Let me just back up a little bit and kind of piggyback on what Brian was saying. NAEP, this participation in the state-by-state has been voluntary over the past 10 years. Some states' legislatures actually require it, but it's voluntary as far as the national NAEP is concerned. So Illinois has, over the past decade, tried actually to get volunteers. They gave us a sample. We couldn't get the level of participation we needed to get a state number. This past year, with our new superintendent, when our new superintendent came in, one of his priorities was to look at how we would be doing in relationship to NAEP and also to TIMSS, which was the third international math and science study, which was an international study. So this year, for the first time, we will be receiving results based on the, I believe it was a 1999 math and science for fourth and eighth grade students. Those numbers, maybe Brian knows better than I do, but I believe they will be coming out sometime this summer. So we will have our first look at a benchmark compared to the nation.
Well, we here in the state of Illinois, we are doing a state, we're testing all students.
We test all students in grades 3, 5, and 8. We give reading, math, and writing, and we have social science and science in grades 4 and 7. And then at grade 11, actually being given for the first time this year, is called our Prairie State Achievement Exam, and that is reading, math, writing, social science, and science.
Mm-hmm. It wouldn't surprise me that school districts, now that we're doing all this testing, if you said to them, here's another test we'd like you to give this one to, that some districts would say, I think we're doing all the testing we can possibly handle, and to do one more would be too much.
We have had that issue in terms of, particularly as the voluntary nature, when the sample is selected, we call the school and we try to get them to participate. And again, you need to have this certain percent. This is actually becoming a big problem across the country, of getting schools to participate. And so I think there's some, well, of course, obviously some federal legislation talking about trying to change some of this. And they're actually talking about using NAEP even more often, actually every year, reading and math. I think that definitely in Illinois, being probably a cross between a centralized, decentralized state and a lot of local control, I'm not sure would be received very well in terms of adding or feeling like they're adding a burden. I might add, too, that I think, and I'd just like to go back to Brian's comment about the beginning of NAEP. NAEP is taking the temperature of the nation or you know, trying to show. It also, the way that it was administered, could give a time for reform or for changes to occur. And I think one of our problems is that many of our policymakers, particularly in Washington and some of our state legislatures, have two-year terms. And they feel we need to see something turn around in a very short amount of time. And I think when I have a, there's an old expression, weighing the pig does not make it gain weight. If we keep, just because we might assess more doesn't mean that kids necessarily are going to get better because of reform or something that's changed may take, you know, 6, 8, and 10 years for it to happen and come into the system. So it's kind of like a patience issue, and we seem to be demanding much more instant turnarounds in terms of school improvement.
Yeah. Let me just ask one more question. As you explained that we're doing testing, we call it ISAT, the Illinois Standards Achievement Test.
Correct.
Now, this is a different test from NAEP, but is it possible to look at the NAEP results and look at the ISAT results and draw some sort of conclusions about where Illinois fits?
It will, in the one sense. One of the things that it's been used, the NAEP has been used for, is we report out scores by students who exceed the standard, who meet the standard, or who are below the standards for the standards in Illinois. And that's what most states are doing. They may call it proficiency. They may call it, there's a lot of different names. What NAEP has been used for with the states that have given it is you might, in a given state might say 90% of their students are meeting a standard for reading, let's say, whereas NAEP shows the proficient level to be way lower than that, maybe 40 or 50%. I think what then the conclusion is drawn that state standard may not be as high as it should be if, in fact, they're not measuring as well on the NAEP. And that could happen, you know, to any number of states, although we certainly, our standards are certainly based a lot on the national standards. The NAEP is using a lot of the national standards in looking at and developing their assessments. So they certainly are comparable, but they're not, they're not exactly the same measures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Carmen points out, excuse me, Carmen points out one of the important uses that NAEP is being put to now, which is to validate inferences drawn from state tests. There are a lot of states that have their own testing programs and have seen scores, let's say, increase dramatically. And there's some question whether those increases are really valid, or whether they're an artifact of focused teaching to that particular test. Mm. And an external test like NAEP can be a very important piece of information in helping you judge whether trends over time are really valid or not, in addition to helping you decide whether your particular designation, your level that you've set is proficient or as advanced is reasonable from a national perspective. They can also help you decide whether the performance that you see over time is a real indicator of what students are mastering, or whether it might be an indication of some other sort of inappropriate test-focused behavior.
Let me again introduce our guest here. We have been talking with two of our three guests, and I'll bring our third guest in here in just a moment. But for anybody who might have tuned in, joining us by telephone, Brian Stetcher. He's a senior research scientist at RAND, Also, Carmen Pfeiffer, Deputy Superintendent for Standards, Assessment, and Accountability with the Illinois State Board of Education. And here in the studio with me, Kevin Seymour. He is part of the Regional Office of Education for Champaign and Ford Counties. His office is in Rantoul. And we're talking about educational testing and what these test scores of national tests like NAEP or a statewide test like ISAT, for that matter, can tell us about students and their performance. And questions are welcome. I want to ask Kevin Seymour, for someone like you who is working on the level that you do, which is a little bit closer to the ground, just for here now for our region, which is just Champaign and Ford counties, does something like this, results of the NAEP test, or even ISAT, what does that do for you, or does that really do anything for you?
Well, for the most part, the NAEP test is known by administrators and people like us in the regional offices who use it to study what's happening out there. But for teachers, the ISAT's more valuable for them because it's a little closer to home. They're aware of the ISAT and the scores and the trends and especially what's happening over time with them. One of the things that we mentioned earlier was the fact that testing seems to be taking a little bit more time than it has in the past, and we keep layering on additional types of things. And teachers are feeling some of that brunt in that they are also, each test is a little bit different, and they feel like they need to prepare students for a variety of different types of tests. So they feel like that's taking some of the instructional time away as well, because standardized achievement tests or the ISAT or the NAEP tests are all paper-pencil type tests. They do require some different levels of thinking than traditional just set and get and repeat back information. But at the same time, it doesn't require the type of reasoning skills and things like that teachers often like to work with in the classroom. So they feel in order to get appropriate scores or scores that show what the students are doing in the classroom, they need to do some preparation for those type of tests.
We have a caller here, and I don't want to make them wait forever, so let's bring them into the conversation. Someone here locally in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Howdy. Can I ask a question about the SATs?
Well, I guess you could. I don't know how well the guests can respond, but you can ask, and we'll see what happens.
Okay. It's got two parts to it. One is just a specific one. You don't have to answer. It's local. When I graduated from Urbana High School, there was a big flap because apparently the SATs for that year, and this was over 30 years ago, had a negative correlation with success in college. And a bunch of parents wanted to sue and get their money back, and the government wouldn't let anybody sue because it would bankrupt the company. Okay, now the question that would apply to more people would be the level of significance of the tests. I see statistics every once in a while in response to advertising from places like Kaplan and stuff like that that says, you know, Kaplan claims to get 20 extra points or something on the SATs if you take their course, and they will say that is less than the statistical error of the SATs, and don't pay any attention, it's not worth your money and your time and stuff like that. But then I see things like just recently, statistics came out that said for students in Illinois between 95 and 99, math scores went up from 488 to 509, and science went up from 514 to 521. Now, from 488 to 509 is only 21 points, and from 514 to 521 is only 7 points. So I worry a little bit about the level of significance. Everybody puts so much weight on these things, and I have to figure that these very small variations are what they call not statistically significant.
Well, I don't know. Brian Stetcher, can you speak to the questions raised by the guest?
Yeah, and in some respects, it's similar to what we were talking about before in that the SAT is another measure that some people look at to try to determine, to try to gauge the temperature of our educational system, what's happening to graduates, to our most elite college-bound graduates. In this case, the distinctions he's making is an important one, and in fact, it makes perfectly good sense. On the one hand, the amount of error in an individual score, the first part of his question, on the SAT can be at one level, and the amount of error on a group average is much smaller. So what the phenomenon he's observing is, in fact, exactly as it should be. When you look at the average score for all the students who took the test in Illinois, the standard error is considerably smaller, because averages are more stable, than the standard error on a score for an individual test taker.
Okay, can I throw in
smaller by a factor that is the square root of the number of test takers?
Right. Can I,
if you had 100,000 kids take it, it would be smaller by a factor of 3,000.
I'm off the air.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
I was out in California, and I happened to get there the day that their SATs hit the front page, and a pair of girl twins from Northern California had the highest scores, which were something like somewhere around 1560 or 1580. And I was very surprised. I knew they had recalibrated the test. But at Urbana High School, we had a couple dozen people who had 1600s. And I had heard something and then did a little more research on that they had tried to make it, you know, basically impossible to get a 1600 anymore. And that they wanted to squish in the curve to make everybody seem more normal and have nobody at the extreme. So they kind of pushed in the top and pushed in the bottom. Is that true? And can you tell me why they would do that?
I can't speak to that. That I don't know about.
Okay, sorry about that.
Can I add something about the individual and the group scores, because it kind of relates to what we were talking, what kind of piggyback again on what Brian was saying.
Sure.
I think that it's really important. It's very important to determine the purpose of a test. And the best purpose for state assessment is group information about how well groups of students are doing. It's a snapshot, if you will. It's not the ongoing videotape of what goes on in a classroom every day. And just as the gentleman who was calling in mentioned, you know, what is significant in terms of increases, we kind of are into a stock market, I don't know if I should bring this up or not, but a stock market mentality of, you know, up and down 2 or 3 points, 8 points. It depends on the length of the scale. Obviously with the SAT, 8 points on the SAT is certainly different than 8 points on the ACT, which is a 36-point scale. So we have all of these headlines that come out and talk about ups and downs, and we're going to somewhere in a handbasket, and we're going somewhere, or we're skyrocketing, or we're something. And we kind of are borrowing these terms, and yet what we need to look at are trends over the time, and we are going to have to make changes in scales because we change tests. NAEP has changed their focus. They certainly are not going to keep the same focus as they had 20 years ago. They're looking at more of the national standards. Certainly ISAT changed from our old goal assessment program to focusing on the Illinois learning standards. So we have to recognize that a given assessment or a given test is good for the purpose, you know, to kind of define the purpose, and then we're going to see some change over time. But our most important piece is to look at this over the trend, and what does this say for us? How some groups of students are doing, and then identifying what we can do about those groups of students who may not be achieving in this case in the state. I think at the national level, again, we have, in the case of the SAT, specifically designed for to determine in the case and combined with a number of other categories or a number of other variables, you know, the success in college. So I think we just need to look at these in relationship to, you know, for what purpose they're being used, and that becomes important. But I think the caller made a really good point in terms of saying things up and down, and then how important some points are up and down.
Mm-hmm. Well, then let me I want to come back here for a moment to Brian Stetcher, just because the report that you all at RAND put out last fall, taking a look at the NAEP results over a period of time, seemed to be generally positive at least in the sense that in reforms that were put in place in the 80s and 90s seem to be having some effect. And yet now, just recently, we had some new results from NAEP, and the stories that I've seen about this don't seem terribly positive. The conclusion seems to be that we still have a big spread between minority and white students, between the students on the top and the students on the bottom. In fact, here I have a story that I pulled off of the web edition of Education Week, where they quote Gary Phillips, the acting commissioner of education statistics for the Department of Education, who said, quote, "There isn't a lot of good news in this report." So here from last fall to now, we seem to be two very different sorts of interpretations of essentially the results of the same test, which again causes me to sort of think about what Karen Pfeiffer just said to ask this question, what do we take away from, particularly for those of us who are not professional educators, when we see stories in the media about the results of big tests like this? Well, what do we take away?
Sure. Let's go back to Carmen's stock market analogy, because it's an apt one. When the stock market is going up, people say, ah, yes, this tells us that we're in good times. And a week later, when the stock market is going down, people say, this tells us we're in bad times. And it's the same stock market. As it changes over time, your interpretation of it changes. That means it's of some value. But to get back to your initial question, the RAND report, well, it was a 250-page book, and so it's hard to summarize it quickly.
Sure.
But it wasn't really looking at trends per se. What it was trying to do was associate state actions to NAEP trends. Mm. So what the author did, Dave Grismer, was to try to get measures of how states spent their resources. Did they build classrooms? Did they raise teacher salaries? Did they invest in smaller class size? Did they invest in state standards? And to look at the racial and ethnic mix of pupils in the state and do some statistical modeling to answer the question which policies led to higher scores and which policies led to lower scores. So it wasn't in general an overall statement about what's happening everywhere and should we be optimistic or pessimistic about the national trend. It was an attempt to say which kinds of state actions seem to be being associated with improvement. And he found that, in particular, early childhood development programs, spending money on preschool programs, was strongly associated with scores going up.
And can I just add on that? We found that so great because that's exactly what we've been pushing here in terms of our budget priorities for early childhood. But what was so amazing about this report, and I think it gives help to those of us in policy areas and working with policymakers, is it gives us evidence because what the RAND report really came to show us was we hear this about class size, for instance, or we see, things don't really. What they did was they took apart the groups of people, and they said for low socioeconomic kids, we see that lower pupil-teacher ratio does make a difference. And we always are hearing this, lower class size does make a difference. They showed this with the NAEP data and with the different states, and that was across different states. So where they had lower, the same family characteristics, when lower teacher pupil ratio and the pre-kindergarten and lower teacher turnover and adequate resources for funding, for teaching, all of those things made a difference. And that is a great piece of information and so much better than just a wall chart that says Illinois is better than Mississippi or Texas is better than Georgia. Those kinds of things are not helpful to us who are trying to make some improvements. So I would like to just applaud the kind of research that's coming from places like RAND, because they give us then information to help support our budgets, to help support our drive to say, no, we need to put resources, or to tell the federal government this is where the resources ought to be.
I got a couple of callers here I want to get to real quick, but I want to come back to Kevin Seymour, who's here in the studio. Any comments you'd like to make on what we talked about so far?
Well, if my memory serves me right, one of the findings in the book was that we need additional resources. It found that classrooms improve, or student achievement improves based on some dollars in lower in preschool and early elementary. But it also suggested that those dollars be targeted to specific places. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering what the reaction is to what seems to be happening in Washington and putting things into bigger block grants and just kind of putting the money out there for people to use as they wish, when in fact the RAND Corporation in this findings say that we have to be really careful there. We need to target those dollars a little bit better to different places so that they do are more effective.
Yes, another old saying is, from your lips to the president's ear. There are a lot of people advising in a lot of different directions, I'm afraid.
We have now three people on hold, and I want to try to get to them. And maybe I should introduce again all of our guests. Here in the studio with me is Kevin Seymour. He works in the Regional Office of Education. This is the Regional Office for Champaign and Ford Counties. And his office is in Rantoul. Staff Development is his area. Joining us by telephone, we have two guests, Carmen Pfeiffer, who is Deputy Superintendent for Standards, Assessment, and Accountability with the Illinois State Board of Education. She's in Springfield. And Brian Stetcher, he is a senior social scientist at RAND, who at the moment is in Seattle. And we're talking about educational testing and what scores from these kind of tests, whether we're talking about a statewide test like the ISAT or the test that we've made reference to, the National Assessment of Educational Progress, the NAEP test, where we have, I guess, the closest thing to a national data set about how students are doing, can make some comparisons among states. And we do have several callers here, so we'll try and get back to what's on the mind of the people listening to Champaign County. That's the next person in line here, line number two. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
My thesis is this. The money that's being spent on large-scale scaled assessment at the state level is largely a waste. We knew what was wrong 20 years ago. The same findings existed at that time. And we haven't invested accurately since that time. And just because the RAND Corporation or some new report after the RAND report will say, let's focus on a smaller class size in inner cities, the political reality will take over, and the political reality is that the politicians at the state level will say, "Let's spend the money everywhere, not just in inner cities. That isn't fair, and let's do some more testing." And none of that helps the individual teacher with the individual kid, as far as progress is concerned. And Kevin probably understands that. When a teacher says, what do I do with this kid? I've tried everything. The answer isn't there, and testing isn't going to provide it.
Well, let's get some comment here from our state people. Kevin, you...
Well, it's an interesting problem in that we do need to look at big data, and that gives us trends, but the teacher's job is to react to individual differences in the classroom. And I build on what I heard last hour on this show, and that, you know, the true teacher, the good teacher, is the one who looks for those qualities in students that aren't necessarily measured on assessments. But the assessments are a reality, and that's something, we're an accountability society, and we have to deal with that. And we need to balance it out is all.
Well, Carmen Pfeiffer, would you, I would expect you probably would want to disagree with the statement of the caller that basically the amount of money, the money we've spent here in the state of Illinois on testing has been wasted. We haven't gotten anything out of it.
I would say that it's certainly, the large-scale assessment certainly has expanded, and not just in Illinois, but across the country. I would probably like to react to a couple of the comments. I think large-scale assessment is an important factor in terms of our accountability system. We have to be accountable for the expenditures of dollars. I do agree that it's most effective, I mentioned this earlier, at the group level. This doesn't negate, and it's... Hello?
I'm not sure what happened there. Brian Stetcher, are you still there?
I'm here.
Oh, okay. Well, that must have been on the caller's line. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. I was going to mention, I think that the teachers definitely need to be helped and be given information about individual student assessment and classroom assessment as a part of curriculum and instruction. So I feel that, you know, we need all of these levels, and we certainly need to remember what the purpose of which of the levels are, and in Illinois, it's holding schools accountable as opposed to individual students accountable, and that's really what's happening more, should be happening at the individual classroom level.
Well, I want to come back to Kevin Seymour because of the question I was thinking about asking earlier, and that is, from the perspective of the teacher, the individual classroom teacher, if you look at tests like this, it may be indeed that when you give a test, a standardized achievement test, again, one of these sorts of things that you have little circles and you fill it in with a pencil so you can machine grade those, that test may tell you something about that child on that day, but there's an awful lot about that child's ability this test won't tell you. It may not tell you how well that child's going to do in future, in other grades, in college. And so a lot of people question what it is these tests show and if they're giving you anything particularly useful. And especially if you talk about teachers teaching to the test, saying, okay, this is really important. The kid's got to pass it, so we'll make sure we get them to pass the test. Considering all that, as far as the classroom teacher is concerned, what good is this test to them?
That's a question they ask themselves a lot. I agree with Carmen in that I think that large-scale assessment plays a part in that, and it's to look at schools and trends and things like that. But teachers are asking themselves more and more that question because they feel like they're really reacting a lot, and they don't want to teach to the test. Philosophically, that seems counterproductive, but at the same time, they do want to prepare students because real estate agents and newspapers tend to look at these and rank them, and they feel pressure that way, especially when you're in a small school where you're the only third grade teacher and everybody looks at you as if you're the one who failed if the scores are low. So the teachers are asking themselves more and more that. I think they realize, again, that assessment is a necessary component, especially large-scale assessment, but they do want some balance there because the art of teaching is finding out the true skills of a student, and those, most of those aren't found on this type of assessment. It's more the day-to-day work and the through reasoning and problem-solving and things like that.
We have another caller here. Let's get to them in Urbana, line 3. Hello.
I kind of to pick up where you left off just now about the what teachers think of this. I was curious why there isn't more movement within those people who actually deal with tests toward, you on the one hand say, well, we know that tests are reality and we have to test with them, deal with them. But on the other hand, when you get down to an individual kid, you look at them more holistically. Why is that only down at the teacher level that's acknowledged? Why aren't people like Gardner's ideas of 7 types of intelligence or this month in the New York Times, there was an article about a Dr. Sternberg. He has a simpler division of mental abilities into analytical intelligence, which is kind of measure that you guys do, and then creative intelligence and practical intelligence as well. And I don't think anybody who really thinks about this whole thing to any extent would deny that creativity and an ability to deal with practical matters are equally as important as analytical intelligence. Why is it that you people who involved in this never seem to make that little jump to a bigger and better view of this whole area? And I'll let you answer, but I've got to admit, I'm quite sure there's something political behind all this. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Maybe we'll get in to go. Let's go to Brian Stetcher. You comment on that?
I don't think there's a great conspiracy out there, if that's what the caller meant by political. But it's hard. Part of the problem is that it is difficult to do and expensive. If you go and talk to test development organizations, Educational Testing Service, CTB, McGraw-Hill, you'll find that their researchers have got back in their files somewhere or in their shelves tests of creativity and tests of all sorts of things other than just what you called analytic reasoning. To a certain extent, these things have worked fairly well, although some of them, like creativity, are a fairly slippery thing to get a handle on. The problem does seem to be when it comes time to make the decision about what to implement on a large scale, those skills appeal less to the people who are making the decisions, and they're less clear to the people who have to use the test scores. Parents are less comfortable knowing what it means that their child comes home with a score of 7 or 9 or 31 on a test of creativity or of artistic interpretation than on these tests of basic reading and mathematics facts and skills. So it's not untestable, but right now we don't seem to have the commitment that those things are of equal value. And so there perhaps it is a question of political will on the part of the decision makers who are spending money to buy measures of school progress.
Well, I was going to bring Karen Pfeiffer in here because that makes it sound as if we're nowadays in education of the big buzzword is accountability. So lawmakers have responded to those concerns on the part of people who say we want to know what we're getting for our money, and we've done that by creating these tests, and we're doing tests that are easy to give, they're easy to score, the results are easy to report and relatively easy to understand, but it sounds as if, having said all that, that we're really questioning what it is the results tell us, what they're testing, whether they're really testing the true ability of that student, whether it's a good measure of how that student will do. It makes it sound as if we're doing what's easiest, but not necessarily the most useful.
Okay. Well, the first thing I think we should start with are the Illinois Learning Standards, and every state has adopted standards. I believe there may be a couple of holdouts, but I believe every state is looking at the standards, and I think we need to go back to again looking at the purpose of the assessment in this case at the state level, and then also to kind of clarify some of the actual kinds of items that are on this test. The standards are kind of what I would consider to be our map, what we expect students to know and be able to do. And that is probably an excellent clarification for some schools in Illinois who may or may not think that all students should be a part of the Illinois Learning Standards. And so one of the ways that we're looking at this, or one of the ways in terms of holding all schools accountable, is to make sure that all students are a part of the standards-led system. In other words, the standards are being taught in all schools to all kids, not just kids who are going on to college, not kids who are just you know, going to maybe go to a two-year institution, but all students. And so if we start that as a basis, and then we look at how the assessment matches those standards, we do have a writing sample. We actually ask kids to do writing. They don't just fill in a multiple choice test about writing. We also ask students to show and make connections as a part of an extended response in reading. They actually respond, and other states are doing this too in terms of the extended response. We also ask students to solve problems, not just bubble in a correct response, but they actually have to solve a couple of math items. Now, these are not large parts of the test, but they become important in terms of a focus for instruction. And we feel that by including these, and many states have done this, and NAEP certainly has an extended response parts of their assessment. In fact, I think they were some of the first leaders in terms of the extended response kinds of items. So these aren't just rote, isolated facts. Even the multiple choice, we would say are asking students to do some critical thinking. But I also think it's not just the responsibility of the state to encourage this, but it's also the responsibility of individual school districts and classrooms to target that kind of instruction and develop assessments at the local level that can more accurately and adequately measure individual student performance in those areas of the critical thinking and of the analytic skills and of the creativity, because that's where it's happening every day in the classroom. Ours, again, is the snapshot. Theirs is the ongoing video. So I see this as a multi-level approach, and the further that you move from the classroom and to that snapshot, yes, it's going to have to be somewhat more simplistic, but we do have accountability, and we can give some direction, even though we might not have as extensive an open-ended or critical thinking kind of assessment that can happen at the local level.
We're at the point here, we're almost out of time, but I want to real quick for, unfortunately, only about a minute, let me ask Kevin Seymour, the kind of thing that Carmen Fiver was just talking about, is that happening in the classroom level?
You know, I think it's really easy to blame. Yeah, it is happening in the classroom. I mean, the teachers are doing wonderful things out there, and we don't always see that in scores. The TIM scores come out, and people get depressed and blame the schools, and the NAEP scores come out, and people say, what are we doing wrong? There's a lot of great things happening out there. On another front, I think it's real easy to blame test makers for a lot of these problems. In fact, the American culture values people being able to repeat information back. I call us the Jeopardy generation, in that, you know, people, the quicker you can give a response, the smarter people think you are. And you know, we have the Millionaire Show now, and the same idea. So I think there's a lot of good things out there, and we can't blame they. I think it's us. We who are, when it comes to accountability, we're asking for a lot of these things. As in the American public, we like easy numbers to read. We like to compare. We're pretty competitive that way.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I'm sorry to say that we're going to have to stop, and I'm afraid we've taken on a topic that is far too complex to really cover in just one 50-minute show. So perhaps we'll say it's something we'll try to get back to on future programs. But for the moment, we're going to have to stop. We want to say thanks to all of our guests. Brian Stetcher, senior social scientist at RAND, thank you very much for talking with us.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
Carmen Fiver with the Illinois State Board of Education, thank you.
Thank you.
And here in the studio with us, Kevin Seymour. He's from the Champaign-Ford County Regional Office of Education.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.